Aloha and welcome. I'm Denise Conan. I'm the Dean of the College of Social Sciences at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And on behalf of the University of Hawaii and the state of Hawaii, it's my pleasure to welcome you to this press conference this morning. Joining us this morning, we have representing Governor Neil Abercrombie, his Chief of Staff, Bruce Coppa, and from the Mexican Foreign Service, Minister Juan Manuel Calderon Jamiz. We have from the legislature, we have Representative Chris Lee, Representative Roy Takumi, Senator Will Sparrow, and I think that's, and other representatives from, and Nicole Lowen just slipped in. Welcome. So we have also a senior policy analysis of the Migration Policy Institute, Dr. Jean Batalova, and from the,
yes. I'm sorry, my mic
it's not working. That's not working. Okay. Okay. We also have Professor Monisha Dasgupta, Professor of Ethnic Studies and Women's Studies from the University of Hawaii at Manoa. For those of you who are not aware, September 15th kicked off National Hispanic Heritage Month. And thus, we are very pleased to pay a special tribute today to our Hawaii Mexican population and the many who have positively influenced our society here in Hawaii. The first known Mexican to arrive in the Hawaiian Islands is believed to have arrived in 1793, Don Francisco de Paula Marin, a young sailor who arrived on the Lady Washington and made his home here in Hawaii. Since that time, we've had many valuable members of the Hawaiian of the Mexican community join Hawaii, and it's a privilege and pleasure today to announce and unveil a pioneering report that really documents the role that Mexicans are playing in our community today. The report, "Newcomers to the Aloha State: Challenges and Prospects for Mexicans in Hawaii." This report has been issued by the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. This study mixes census research, surveys, and interviews to issue a first-time profile of Mexican heritage people in Hawaii. Our governor, Neil Abercrombie, wishes he could join us today. He's preparing for a long journey, he cannot be with us today. However, Governor Abercrombie has been a strong supporter of immigrants and their integration into American communities, and especially here in Hawaii. So in his place, I'm very pleased to introduce his Chief of Staff, Bruce Coppa, to the podium.
Aloha. Good morning, everyone. Senator, representatives, thank you for coming, and most importantly, Minister Calderon. It's very Italian.
Yes.
The governor, as was stated, the governor is preparing for to leave on a long vacation. So I've had the opportunity to come down and speak and offer a proclamation today. But before I start, there was a few things that I wanted to note about Mexicans in Hawaii, and you'll be interesting to know this, that King Kamehameha III reportedly invited 200 Mexican cowboys to Hawaii to teach roping and riding skills necessary to herd wild cattle. Quite an interesting fact. The Hawaiian word paniola may even be based on Hawaiian's pronunciation of paniolos. Is that correct?
Paniolo.
Oh. Paniolo. So, again, it is something that, you know, as we look, as the governor always talks about our diversified culture, there's many things when we look back in history of what we do today, and it's amazing. We learn more and more each day. The one thing before I read the proclamation, I also wanted to say that in speaking with the minister, we have many things in common, which in particular in tourism. And I asked if tourism is up in their country, and he said, yes, it is. And we both together recognize the value of to our economy. So it's one that we recognize and will keep promoting. But I will offer this. You're only here, this is your first time to Hawaii.
Yes, sir.
And you're only here for one day. Well, 2 days. You've got to come back with your family and spend time here in this beautiful state, and I'll make sure that we can get the governor to Mexico one day. So with that, let me read the proclamation. I know sometimes these are long, but, you know, in this case, when we look back at the first Mexican coming to Hawaii, I think this is so appropriate to this proclamation. In particular, in recognition of the release of the newcomers to Aloha State, challenges and prospects for Mexicans in Hawaii. On behalf of the people of Hawaii, I offer a warm aloha to everyone gathered to the release of the report, Newcomers to the Aloha State. Challenges and prospects for Mexicans in Hawaii. The result of collaboration between the Washington, D.C.-based Migration Policy Institute and the University of Hawaii, the report provides insightful data on our Mexican origin community and unique experiences of newcomers, residents to the Aloha State. Eliminating barriers to state services is an important goal of my administration. In June, I am pleased to sign into law Act 217, House Bill 266, relating to language access, which appropriates funds for the statewide Language Access Resource Center and a multilingual website pilot that provides information about government and government-funded services. In Hawaii, we recognize our diversity, defines us rather than divides us. With insight provided this report, I am confident there will be opportunities to further partner in addressing the needs of our multicultural community so that all members are provided the ability to contribute to our island culture, economy, and way of life. Mahalo for providing this valuable resource to the people of Hawaii. With warmest regards, Neil Abercrombie, Governor of the State of Hawaii. Again, Minister, thank you so much for coming here today, and I'd like to present this to you.
I'm especially honored now to introduce our next speaker, Minister Juan Manuel Calderon Jaimes. Minister Calderon is a member of the Mexican Foreign Service, and he has had extensive experience in consular affairs at and the protection of Mexicans abroad. His longstanding work in consular affairs includes various leadership positions in Seattle, San Bernardino, Miami, Chicago, Tucson, and Venezuela Embassy of Mexico. He currently serves as Deputy Director and General of the Modernization and Consular Administration. It's my pleasure to welcome Minister Calderon to the microphone.
Muy buenos días. Good morning. Let me start with my English and try to explain to you what important for the Mexican government is to be here. First, on behalf of the Mexican government, the Mexican Foreign Affairs Minister, the Mexican Embassy in Washington, D.C., and the General Mexican Consul in San Francisco, I would like to thank the following authorities. Of course, the Governor of Hawaii, Neil Abercrombie, the City Mayor of Honolulu, Kirk Caldwell, the President of the University of Hawaii, the Immigration Policy Institute, Mr. Bruce Coppa. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chief of Staff of the Governor of Hawaii. Dr. Denise Kona, University of Hawaii College of Social Science Dean. Dr. Jana Batalova, Senior Policy Analyst, Migration Policy Institute. Dr. Monisha Dugopta.
That's Gupta.
Okay. Associate Professor, Ethnic Study and Women's Study, Director, Center for South Asian Studies, University of Hawaii. I understand I have an appointment with the Senator Donna Mercado King, Senator President of Hawaii. Today, this is a special date, today and tomorrow. Why? Because we are going to have the presentation, the report about the Mexicans in Hawaii. Newcomers to Aloha State. This by Jana Batalova, Monisha Dash Gosta, and Sue Patricia Hanlon from the University of Hawaii and the Immigration Policy Institute. And also, I understand Hawaii is celebrating the event with the Hispanic Heritage Month. But let me talk about the Mexicans in this beautiful land. In 2010, the Mexican population in Hawaii was about 35,000. About 80% of this community was U.S. born. And approximately 5,300 were born outside of the country. What is the relation between Mexico and Hawaii? For me, it's a strong and potential. We have many things in common. Currently, Mexico is the third largest trade partner in the United States, for the United States. Bilateral trade accounted $494 billion in 2012, almost $1 million per minute. Mexico is the second destination for U.S. exports and in ranks among top five foreign markets in 34 states. In 2012, Mexico was 17th international destination for Hawaiian goods and accounted for only $4 million. However, exports have increased by 246% since 2005, and there is clearly strong potential international trade administration. As Mr. Copa said, we believe that we have very common issues, Mexico and Hawaii. We know that tourist sector is very important for both for Mexico and the state of Hawaii. We would like to collaborate. We would like to have an agreement, the collaboration between Hawaii and Mexico, not just in tourists. We have many things to do. For example, University of Hawaii. We have very good relation with many, many universities in the United States. Why we don't have any with University of Hawaii? I believe if we were very close, very, very close, to help the Mexican community, to insert this Mexican community in Hawaiian society. Hawaii is a diversity city, state, excuse me, and we can make many things, both Mexico and Hawaii. The reason that I came here is to collaborate with the Hawaiian government and try to get an open a Mexican consulate in this beautiful city. We need to help for everybody, especially with the governor office, the mayor office of Honolulu, to try to get as soon as possible an office, the Mexican consulate in this beautiful city. Thank you very much.
Mahalo, that is very exciting indeed. A Mexican consulate in our beautiful city of Honolulu, that would be very, very exciting. Now, I'm very pleased to introduce the research team that's responsible for this report, and they will share with you brief highlights. Let me just say that the research that was undertaken really involved many of the people that are here in the room today. I know a number of you have participated in this study and have been supportive of the study, and we thank you for that. And the study is quite impressive and is just being released today. You can see highlights. We have highlights for you here. One thing that is very exciting to note is that the profile of Mexicans here in Hawaii is different than in the U.S. mainland and other locations. And for that, for more news on that, I'm very happy to turn it over to our researchers. Dr. Jean Batalova, Senior Policy Analyst from the Migration Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Monisha Dasgupta, Associate Professor of Ethnic Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Please join me in welcoming them to the podium.
Wait, is it okay to have us speak from there?
No.
You want this here?
Yeah.
Okay. Oops. Okay. Moving technology.
Moving with technology.
All right. Well, good morning and aloha, everyone. I'm delighted to be here. It's really great to see so many of you in the audience. I would like to thank the College of Social Sciences and the Department of Ethnic Studies, Mexican government, and the governor's office for an opportunity to hold this event and for inviting me to present at this event. I also would like to thank my colleagues and collaborators, Manisha Dasgupta and Suea Patricia Hegland, as well as my colleague at the Migration Policy Institute, Michelle Mittestad, for a truly wonderful opportunity to collaborate on this fascinating project. We already had snippets of our findings, so let me walk you through our key themes and key stuff that we found. I have to confess that the first time I heard about the Mexicans in Hawaii project, my reaction was, Mexicans where? Not in California, not in Texas, not even in North Carolina, but in Hawaii. Well, I'm glad that my fears were unfounded. What our research found that there were nearly 40,000, a little bit less than 40,000 people of Mexican origin who represented the largest newcomer Latino community in the most ethnically diverse state in the country. But let me put this number in context. So we know that there are about 12 million Mexican immigrants in the United States. They are by far the largest origin immigrant group. We also know that there are about 35 million people who represent Mexican diaspora, which are the third largest diaspora group in the country after Germans and Irish. So by comparison, the roughly 40,000 Mexican origin people in Hawaii is really, really small. Why is this community so interesting? Well, our research found that in sharp contrast to Mexican origin people in the rest of the country, those from Hawaii are overwhelmingly U.S. citizens. They have higher levels of education, greater English proficiency, and lower rates of poverty. However, we also learned that compared to the rest of the state population, the integration story of Mexican origin population in Hawaii is less successful. So let me quickly walk you through our key demographic and socioeconomic findings that draw on the analysis of the nationally representative survey called American Community Survey, as well as immigration and legal status data. Manisha will discuss our main themes that emerged from our in-depth interviews with community members, as well as a qualitative survey with service providers and community leaders that were conducted on three states, Oahu, Maui, and Hawaii Island. We focused on these three states because they are home to the majority of Mexican origin people in Hawaii. We found that whereas Mexicans on the U.S. continent often reside in ethnic enclaves, the population in Hawaii, the Mexican origin population in Hawaii, is highly dispersed, both within the islands as well as across the islands. Although Maui and Hawaii do have neighborhoods associated with Mexicans. What this geography means is that Mexican residents' mobility from island to island as well as to and from a U.S. continent is restricted because of the expensive travel, air travel, and in the case of the unauthorized population, due to the risk of immigration enforcement and surveillance at the airports. We found that the community experienced a rather rapid growth in the last two decades, increasing from slightly less than 15,000 in 1990 to nearly 40,000 by 2011. The community grew in waves. We already heard from Bruce that the first settlers came back came to Hawaii back in 1830s to teach cattle ranching to native Hawaiians. After a long hiatus, during which there were a number of Asian groups coming to the state of Hawaii, there were two smaller waves in the 20th century. In the 1970s, middle-class professional Chicanos or U.S.-born Mexicans came from other parts of the United States to Hawaii, as well as Mexicans who served in the U.S. military who made Hawaii their home. In the 1980s, Mexican farm workers were recruited from other states, in particular California and Texas, to come to work on pineapple and sugar plantations. They were attracted by prospects of permanent jobs and better paying jobs that were offered in Southwest. And the 1990s and the flows in the 1990s and 2000s were composed of diverse groups of people. Some were coming from other parts of the United States, while others arrived directly from Mexico. These divergent migration patterns have a direct impact on the composition of Mexican origin community in Hawaii and their outcomes. For one, close to 90% are U.S. citizens by birth or naturalization. It is in stark contrast with the statistics nationwide. Among the non-citizen population of about 5,500 people, the majority, or about 4,000, are likely to be unauthorized. And here's another interesting point of comparison with the rest of the country and the state. Anyone who follows immigration in the U.S. overall would hear that Mexicans account for the largest immigrant origin group, but also the largest unauthorized population. The latest data released just today say that 52% of the roughly 12 million unauthorized immigrants in the United States are from Mexico. But in Hawaii, they account for only 10% of the unauthorized population, which is mostly Asian. There are also interesting differences of who is eligible and who applied for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival program. Some of you might know about the program, and I'll be happy to elaborate on that in the Q&A session. But going back to our profile, so in terms of age, what we found that the foreign-born Mexicans in Hawaii are younger than the rest of the immigrants in the state. And this is the case also for the native-born Mexicans in Hawaii. What it all means is that a large proportion is in school or about to enter pre-K through 12 education. In terms of human capital, we found that Mexican origin people are substantially more educated and have stronger English skills than the rest of the country. And mostly because so many of them were born in the United States and completed U.S. schools. In terms of employment and economic well-being, first we found that a much higher share of Mexicans in Hawaii were in the military than nationwide, 17 versus less than 1%. Second, we found that Mexican origin civilian adults have higher labor force participation than the overall state population, a pattern that is similar to the national trend. Although Mexicans in Hawaii work across a variety of industries, including healthcare, public administration, education, roughly half are employed in tourism-related industries and construction, the two industries that got hit by the Great Recession earlier and harder. The data, when we look at the unemployment data, the unemployment rates of Mexican origin people in Hawaii were higher back during the recession as well as now. So even during the recovery period, their unemployment rates are higher than for the state overall. However, they were lower than for the Mexicans on the U.S. continent. And the kinds of work and the opportunities they have in the labor force, in the labor market, translates into other less than state average outcomes. Namely, the Mexicans in Hawaii are more likely to be in poverty and among low-income families, and they are less likely to own a home. What our quantitative analysis served as a springboard for the rich ethnographic research that allowed to probe and delve deeper into what these outcomes mean for the community today and for their prospects in the future. And for that, I'm going to turn to Manisha.
Thank you, Jana, for that very succinct summary of the highlights of our Mexican origin population in Hawaii. I want to thank everyone in the room. Many of you have been very, very close to this project. You've been instrumental in making this project happen, so thank you for being here and sharing this moment with us. I also want to thank those in the Capitol who helped us to set up the space and helped us hold the event here. So as Jana mentioned, from the very beginning, we designed the research to present both qualitative and quantitative data. And the qualitative data enabled us to actually grasp the experiences of Mexican origin residents in Hawaii on the ground and also put a face to it. When we went out into the field, Sue and I, and we shared the numbers of Mexican origin residents with our participants, they expressed stunned surprise. And the usual comment was, if there are so many of us, where are they? And this reaction reflects the invisibility of the community in this very diverse, multi-ethnic state. So the goal of our research is to make this fast-growing community visible and to lay out policy responses that are appropriate for the unique demographics and socioeconomic characteristics of this community. As you saw, Jana explained how this community is very distinctive from the communities that we find on the U.S. continent. And so our policy responses, too, have to be shaped then to respond to those demographics. So I'm going to quickly outline the main themes that that emerge from our qualitative and quantitative analysis. So the very first thing that our survey participants emphasized across the board on the three islands on which we conducted our fieldwork was to express great pride in their contributions to the state's economy and also their cultural contributions that enrich the multi-ethnic fabric of the state. The second very distinctive point is that through our research, we found several positive indicators that signal the desire of this community to be integrated into the state and become recognized as a part of the state's socioeconomic fabric. And unlike, as Shauna pointed out, what we have found on the continent, Mexican residents in Hawaii live in very ethnically mixed neighborhoods. They don't live in enclaves. They also work shoulder to shoulder with other ethnic groups. They felt that they blended in with the other populations in the state. And even as these are very, very encouraging signs, they're double-edged because we found that the community's ability to blend in compounded its invisibility and posed challenges to the community's ability to develop a collective voice and transform their numbers in terms of U.S. citizenship into political empowerment. We also discovered several barriers to their integration, to the integration of the Mexican origin community here. And the main ones are, you know, they felt that their linguistic difference and their ethnic identity as Mexicans or Latinos marked them as outsiders in the state. So even as their self-perception was that they blended in, they often said that once we opened our mouth or, you know, we shared our ethnic identity with people, then we were marked as outsiders. Those who had limited English proficiency could not really interface meaningfully with schools, government agencies, hospitals, the police, and the courts because of the lack of language access. And it's very encouraging that steps are being taken to address that that need. Immigration enforcement also posed a major barrier to the integration prospects of this community. As we noted earlier, the majority of Mexican origin residents have legal status, but they feel very targeted by both federal immigration enforcement agents as well as local law enforcement, which means the police. This perception was substantiated by Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice statistics on detentions, court appearances, and removals. The most recent data show that even though the undocumented population of Mexican origin residents in Hawaii is estimated to be 10%, they represent 20% of immigration court cases, the bulk of which were removal cases. The last thing that I wanted to touch upon is the unique challenges of our insular nature, the insular nature of the state, and the challenges that it poses for those who have to travel to the consulate in San Francisco in order to get documents or renew their documents. And again, this is very, very unique to our geography. The Mexican consulate that serves Hawaii is based in San Francisco. The mobile consulate and the San Francisco consulate thought very inventively and started to send mobile consulates from 2008. And every year there is at least one mobile consulate visit to each island, if not more. And this ameliorated the problems with documents to a certain extent. But we met several people who were, during our field work, who were unable to apply for their documents or update them because for one reason or the other, they couldn't make it to the mobile consulates. This is a severe problem. So what are the implications of our findings? The implications that we outline here are relevant not only for the Mexican community or more generally the Latino residents of our state, but also all other newcomer groups in the state. The state can play a very key role in addressing the integration prospects of the steadily growing community because this community is now here to stay. They've had a history of over 20 years in the state, the newcomers. The state can obviously continue to support language access in the ways that it has. It can add Spanish to the languages in which government documents are translated. And for the city and county, we would ask it to restore the Spanish language test so that people can pass their driver's license tests. We also ask the state to pay attention to the growing presence of this group in the pre-K to 12 stages in order to prepare them for secondary education. This is a growing population, and our picture here sort of indicates the youth, the age of this population. state agencies are now responsible for screening a person's immigration status, and we recommend training in the range of very complicated documents for authorized presence. And the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service provides this training for free, but you have to request it. We feel that this is very necessary. The county and the state need to play an active role in ensuring that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, focuses on its stated priority of removing high-risk individuals. This step is essential to restore trust between the local Mexican community and more largely the Latino residents of the state and local law enforcement. If it undertakes these steps, the state of Hawaii, it will be joining other states like New York, California, and Illinois that seek to responsibly address the implications of the federal-local cooperation in enforcing immigration law. The implications of our study for Mexican nationals clearly point in the direction of the benefits of institutionalizing the authority and reach of the Mexican government. And we very much encourage because such a presence would help Mexican nationals to renew their documents or to apply for their documents. It would ease those difficulties. It would, we also see the Mexican consular presence here, encouraging public diplomacy in order to increase the visibility of this community within the state. It can play an incubating role in encouraging civil society organizations, and it has played this kind of role in other places in the United States. The Mexican consulates in other parts of the country have helped the DACA youth, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the executive order. So the consulates have helped those youth to apply for their documents. This would be an important role. And lastly, we feel that a presence here of the Mexican government would, as the minister indicated, foster and strengthen entrepreneurial ties between Hawaii and Mexico. So we really encourage those sorts of steps being taken. Thank you very much for your attention and all your support. And is it technically? Thank you.
Okay, I want to leave some time for you to be able to ask independent questions, but we can take a couple of questions from you now. Questions? Yes.
Are there islands? Did you do a breakdown by islands where some Mexicans tend to be more educated or more in the military or face greater NSA and harassment?
Unfortunately, given the small data sample, we weren't able to look at the island-to-island comparisons. So, just judging from our qualitative work, yes, there will be differences in terms of the profile because it has a lot to do with migration history. But Maui, those who came to Maui would be somewhat different from those who are in Oahu.
In what way?
Well,
I could address that. So, for example, on the Big Island, when the community members read our reports, they said that most of the folks on the Kona side, the Kona Kailua side, who work in the agricultural sector and who are actually the backbone of the coffee industry, may not have beyond sixth grade education. So they are likely to be less educated. Certainly, you know, they're working in agriculture, so they're not high-skilled labor. So that's a profile very different from the professionals that, who we found on find on Oahu. And if you see the quick facts sheet and you see the map, you will see that most of the Mexican origin residents are living in Oahu, and there are a lot of professionals among them. So there are, you know, distinctions in terms of the occupations in which we find these Mexican residents, also in terms of their educational levels and where they're able to enter the economy. And I think that ours is a pioneering report, and this is a wonderful opportunity to for people to just add to this research because it's just waiting there to be done. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. So in February of this year, the Board of Regents passed a policy that allows in-state tuition for undocumented students. And of course, there are, you know, sort of the guidelines are very much like the guidelines to be found on the continent in 13 other states. And what it does is it opens up access to education to youth across the islands, and we have been actively recruiting this group of students, and the Latino student groups as well as the Mexican students. They did wonderful outreach to our Board of Regents, to our students, to other faculty members, explaining to them why this was an important issue, why we needed access, why these youth needed access to college. So we really are very encouraged by that role.
Okay, one last question. Yes.
I just have a follow-up question for the minister regarding the consulate. You mentioned that you're hoping to collaborate with the Hawaiian government and get one opened. I wonder how likely do you think it is that would succeed, and is the Mexican government committed to doing that? Is it a decision that's already been made?
We are thinking to open an office in Hawaii, but, you know, we have to have some steps. First of all, we have to get the permission, the authorization from federal government in Washington, D.C. Second, we have to work very close with the state, the governor office, about the facilities, what kind of facilities we are going to have. And the city of Honolulu, the major city, we have to work. You know, it's hard to say tomorrow, next year, but we are going to work very, very hard to have the Mexican consulate in this beautiful land.
Okay, thank you very much. One more hand. Thank you.
For more information, visit the Migration Policy Institute at www.migrationpolicy.org.